This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Halflings. It's Liv. I just wanted to start this episode off by giving a huge shout out to Narrative Universe for sponsoring this episode of Three Black Halflings. We're about to jump into the episode in which myself and Jeremy get to chat with the creator of Narrative Universe, Joshua Orzac, and the writer of Narrative Universe, Daisy Stridinger. I just wanted to say up top that there are several instances of accidental dead naming and misgendering in the episode. I spoke to Daisy after we finished recording this episode and asked her if she would prefer them taken out or left in. She said she would prefer to keep those instances in the episode, because adjustment takes time and it's all about the effort you put into learning. But to clarify, the wonderful Daisy uses she/her pronouns. Let's get into the episode! It's me, Liv Kennedy, and I am joined today by, and I use she/her pronouns.
Liv, I that was awesome. Every time you do it, it reminds me of the same thing, but I always forget to mention it.
Oh yeah,
you sound like Jessie from Toy Story. It's the at the
oh
end of it
God.
When you get to the. Ooh, there's a real cowgirl.
She's like my icon. Don't even do
there's
that.
There's a real cowgirl freewheeling like yeehaw like, sort of vibe.
Oh,
to
you're
it.
So right. Oh, I, honestly, like I was obsessed with Jessie growing up, and big praise for me here. Yeah,
so Jessie's much, the bomb. So Jessie good. Is great.
So good. Who are you?
I am Jeremy Cobb. My pronouns are he, him, but the halfling henchman calls me Jeragorn, King of Cobdor.
Ooh.
What a quality nickname.
All right, that's pretty good.
What a quality nickname.
Pretty dang good. Love that.
Yeah, Jeragorn. I actually really like
that. Yeah, everyone's been knocking out of the park recently. It's been
we got some really, really good cool. ones coming up.
Absolutely.
We put out the call on the Patreon, and the patrons absolutely stepped up.
Mm-hmm,
but we're not alone here.
No, we're not.
We're not here to talk about how great the patrons are. We're here to talk about how great another thing is.
Yes, and we've been sponsored to do so, and we're very excited to talk about it.
Yes. We are very excited to welcome, and I'll introduce you in the order that you appeared in this call.
Okay.
the project head at the Narrative Universe, a Discord server dedicated to pro GMing and the Narrative Universe system, Joshua Orzac.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Joshua.
Hello. Thanks for having me. Hey.
And content creator, writer for the Narrative Universe. Oh. And you may know her as Miss Kurtwise, Daisy Stridinger.
Wow. Whenever I try to do like the scream thing, it just kind of turns into me going into the mic.
It's a sound of joy.
Yes, for sure.
Just.
Joshua, Daisy, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having
us.
Yeah.
Of course.
I'm so excited to get into talking about this because. Cool. Let's start at the beginning, because I have a lot of questions. We're probably not going to get through all of them, but let's start at the very beginning. Can you both please, or can one of you, describe and summarize the Narrative Universe?
I'm going to let Kurt do that. He wrote the book.
Daisy.
I'm going to let Daisy do that.
Sure.
She wrote the book. I apologize.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so the Narrative Universe as a system actually started about 30 years ago with Josh over here and his home group of friends who became frustrated that I think it was second edition D&D at the time just wasn't quite doing what they really wanted a TTRPG to do. So they set out to create their own, and almost 30 years later, we have the Narrative Universe system. It is a Very flexible, modular, as the name might suggest, narrative heavy system that is intended for player agency and ease of running the game as the narrator. It's really designed and meant to be a game for every single person at the table, where, you know, you can sit down and without really having to worry totally about the rules or getting into the nitty gritty of, you know, mechanics and everything, sit down and tell a really fantastic story together using the dice to help decide what exactly happens.
Amazing. I mean, like 28 years ago, you said, right? Nearly 30 years ago. That is so wild. What made you want to make your own thing? Was it that other things weren't like doing it for you, or what was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I was 17. I'm 44, so this was a long time ago. You know, me and my friends were playing, and we just thought the game was slow, and we just wanted to kind of throw some stuff together and see some ways we can speed it up and make it a little bit more, you know, customizable. I guess we wanted to tell our own stories, and I got a book. I read it. I was poor, so we didn't have the money to actually buy a book, but I went to the bookstore and I found a book called TTRPGs for Dummies.
Cool.
And I read through it, and he has this, then I, to this day, whenever somebody's either making a system, because people ask me, people want to make their own systems, and they ask me a lot about it, because I've been doing this professionally for 10 years, over 10 years now, and it's been very successful on that level. I mean, I've had a good career running games in the system, so it's successful by any, you know, stretch of the imagination already, and people ask me about it. And so he has this exercise that he had in the book that was life-changing for me. He said, sit down, you and two other people, tell a story, and every time you come to a conflict, just roll 100-sided dice against each other. Whoever rolls higher wins. No stats, no other rules, just who rolls higher wins, and you tell the story that day and see how rich and how detailed a game and a story you can tell. And that will help you think about what is or isn't important in any TTRPG rule system. Mm-hmm. And that play became the foundation of how we built the rest of the system. So Fate Rolls, which became central, all kind of came from that idea. And to this day, when someone is a new DM and they've never DM'd before and they're nervous or they want advice, I give them that advice. I was like, take two of you people, tell a story, just roll 100-sided dice against each other. Whoever rolls higher wins. Don't worry about stats. Don't worry about rules. Mm-hmm. Just tell a story and see what that does for you as a DM. And then you can come back to the rules and it'll help you interpret and run a game more effectively. And that becomes the foundation of everything we do from that point on.
It's so interesting that literally when you think about how we've kind of overcomplicated TTRPGs. Like when you can ultimately just roll that 100-sided dice and like see what happens. Yeah, that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, like the core element of any TTRPG is collective storytelling, typically with an addition of some chance.
Right.
That's like the G part of it. Typically is like no one's entirely sure how this is going to go, so we insert some kind of a dice roll. But it also, I think, sort of gets to the heart of the idea of a TTRPG as a storytelling mechanism, as opposed to, say, a war game. Because, I mean, D&D obviously originated, was heavily inspired by war games, was not really built to tell stories necessarily, at least in its earliest forms, and has kind of evolved to become more story focused, but it's still kind of like
teetering.
So I can see where, especially if you and your friends, especially at the time, were like, look, this is D&D being too slow is a complaint that is still very common today.
True.
Even among people that like I play with, some of my friends really don't. I have a friend who doesn't really enjoy playing Baldur's Gate 3 for that reason, because he just doesn't like the turn-based combat, having to sit there for a long time, and then you get to do one thing, and then you have to sit there again to do another. You have to wait to play like another 30, 45 minutes at the table. Because looking at the game, it is very reminiscent. A lot of the elements are very reminiscent of D&D, like the idea of the character classes and the spells and so forth, even though they mechanically function very differently. Can you like summarize, if you were, aside from like the narrative aspect of it, could you like, if you were going to say, hey, here's what this game is, could you give like a sentence or two summary of it?
Do you want to try, Daisy? You want to hit
that? So the narrative universe is a modular, story-heavy TTRPG system that is designed for players to be able to pick up and learn the rules very quickly and easily, but without binding your story to limitations based upon those rules.
Mm, for sure. Okay. I do really appreciate the fact that not only is it like quick to pick up, but there's an actual quick start that you send to us that is just like, oh, I can just like dive into this straight away. I love that. I love being able to just be like, okay, everyone, sit down. We're learning this right now.
I've run a bunch of one-shots for mutuals and other content creators and people. And the question I get every time is like, oh, do we have to read a lot of stuff before? And I'm like, no, just bring your dice and be ready to hang out. And we teach everything right then and there, because at the core of the system, you can pick up two mechanics and play the entire game from those two mechanics. And then if you and your group really get into, you know, oh, we really want like a hardcore exploration survival game, you can pick the mechanics out of the book that kind of help enhance that and put more crunchiness, more mechanics where you want those more mechanics, but leave it more streamlined where you want it more streamlined.
Absolutely. It's interesting. Daisy, I can tell that you're like so excited by this system, which is super cool. Like, how did you and like Joshua like get to talking about making this a system?
Yeah, so a little over a year ago now, Josh approached me just to do a review and a video on my channels for at the time, the Orsec Narrative Universe Discord channel. Like from day one or two playing the system, I was hooked. Because kind of like you mentioned, Jeremy, a lot of my issues with Dungeons & Dragons, in addition to just it being very slow, was as the DM, I became kind of like disengaged during combat. Because it became not about telling a story with the group. It just became about like doing math.
Sure, absolutely. I'm bad at math, so I get that.
And I also like wanted a system and was looking for a system that wasn't so combat focused, because I've been, you know, as I've gone on, more interested in non-violent stories and stories that don't necessarily just directly go to combat 100% of the time. And this system was immediately like everything I loved about Dungeons and Dragons and collaborative storytelling, and also kind of what I always had hoped that D&D might be. So I approached Josh and I was like, hey, like, you know, I noticed a lot of the community is saying that they would like some of the stuff written down. You know, I'm a writer. I really love this. Like, would you be interested in working together to, you know, start to make this more of a formal thing? And Josh was on board. We became partners. We started working for, you know, 6 or 8 months, just talking about the system, and sort of Josh telling me verbally, because up until that point in time, you had never actually written it down.
Oh, I have TikToks where I say I will never write it down. I have videos where I say I will never. People ask me, "Will you write your system?" I'm like, no, I will not write my system down, because it was. And then he was like, "You want to write your system down?" I was like, "Yeah, let's do it." when Daisy Kurt at the time came up and was like, "Hey, I really would like to write this," I was like, "I'd really like to let you write it, so let's just do it." Which was good too, because I wasn't married to the idea of writing it down when it became Kurt at the time Daisy's project. It was very easy to let her. And just take like anything she wanted to change, anything she wanted, you know, I was very open to whatever she thought would make the process, make the end result better, because I wasn't married to the idea of like having a book with my system. I've always been more focused on the overall project, which is about pro GMing. We do text games. People come in and that's what we do. We provide like, we basically do TTRPGs at scale. So people are doing play by post all day. That's how I make my money. We're involved in that project as well. And the system is really, really good for play by post. It's just really a good system to run games that way. I think it is for the future of like pro GMing. I truly believe it's superior to any other system I know in terms of being able to run like a pro GM system at scale. And that's always been my focus, and that's what I'm about. So I was never really married to the writing of it down. So it became her project, and I was happy with that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's, I have two things that I wanted to ask. So first, can you define what at scale would mean in the context of pro GMing? And then the second question is, I will ask after you answer.
So I'm running. So we Daisy and I run 75 games right now, the two of us and somebody else, and we can run probably 150 reasonably. The goal is eventually to have it to where, because the problem with TTRPG is an art form. People are only now really coming. I tell people all the time, TTRPG is now where stand-up comedy was in the 80s and 90s when people first started thinking of it as an art form and not just people getting up and, you know, messing around. And we're getting that place now. The struggle, which I think is the center of TTRPGs, and some people try to resist this as a struggle, but it is the struggle for it to be recognized as art form, is how do you professionalize it? There is no widely accepted art form, none, that doesn't have a professional class to it. Dancing, music, painting, all of it. There is a professional class for every major art form, and I think the struggle at the center of TTRPGs is how do you professionalize this art form? A lot of people, their focus becomes actual plays. That is where they think they're going to professionalize it. Anybody who knows anything about, you know, I have a pretty good background in business. Amy knows about business and knows that that is not going to work at scale. It's not possible. You have too many, it's already oversaturated market. Really, that is not how you professionalize the art form. It's not going to work. It just isn't. Sorry, that's a fact. You will not, you will get individual, very, very small numbers. That is not professionalizing the art form. This is not. The other is pro GMing. That's a much better approach. The problem with pro GMing is for live and voice chat games, when people are available, they're available nights and weekends. If you have a family, if you have a wife, if you have anything outside of yourself, good luck having a life. And I know this for myself because that's how I did it for a long time. And I didn't have any kind of life outside because all of my work was nights and weekends. That's when you're going to work, and you're going to, and even then you're going to struggle to put together enough hours to make a life. You just are. So we are at, there is a crossroads going on. And but with text games, with play by post, there's also, we know, if you know anything about some recent studies that have been done, that the game runner to player ratio is way skewed. There's a lot more people who want to play than people who want to run games. And the community's general opinion has been, well, let's just convince those people who want to play to want to run games. And it's not going to work because it is a different type of person that wants to run a game and play. And there's even talks that the endurance of the hobby is under threat because of that disconnect. That's a fact. I mean, there's studies out that show that that's an actual possibility, that it will collapse because there's so many people who want to play who can't find the ability to play. If you, through play by post and through text games, by checking in whenever people have time, so you get rid of problems of scheduling, you can run the games during the day. This can become a 9-to-5. You are able to create a professionalized process, and there is no limit to where this can scale. You can conceivably scale up as big as you want. You have people running games, you have people getting into games, and then the people who are running the games can expand that foundation of a business into voice chat games as they have availability and as they want to expand their business that direction. And I've experienced success. This is like, you know, real success in this business model, and it is something that can be scaled up, and that's what we're in the middle of trying to figure out right now. If we do, and I have no doubt, there's so many tools out with that make this easier, and something that can be done at scales people can't even imagine, and we have the opportunity to make that happen, and that's our goal. That's my personal goal.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I imagine that's really helpful for people with like bad social anxiety, which I had before as well. So like that is, I could imagine just being like, oh, there's a version of this where I can just type. Oh, I love that. You know,
right. I've heard that from so many players as well, that whether it is social anxiety or fears of necessarily like safety at the table or playing with people that you don't necessarily know, there sort of puts that extra level, that layer between yourself and everyone. For myself as a writer, I love having the extra minute or two just to like take a moment and not have to feel that pressure of like, oh, I need to come up with this perfect response right now.
Oh, exactly. I cannot identify with that more. I can write things so much better than I can speak them. That's probably really bad because I'm a podcast host. But like, if you gave me like a second to like write down my responses,
she's good on the mic.
Exactly. You'd be like, wow. She's oh my god. She's smart. What? Yeah. No. I completely understand that. That's really cool.
So let me just describe what I'm imagining based on what you're saying, Josh. So it sounds like what you're describing then is essentially, like in the case of a Discord server, like you have for the narrative universe, you'd have like a series of individual game channels. Mm-hmm. And in those mm-hmm. channels, players could jump in and leave messages throughout the day mm-hmm. to describe what their characters are doing or saying. And you as the GM would essentially just be kind of on call throughout the day to hop in, you know, maybe take 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes out of an hour and respond to stuff.
Yep.
And then that just goes on throughout the day, pretty much continuously. It's an ongoing group storytelling. And if a person is unavailable, they can just not be there for several days and then jump in and be like, hey, I'm here now. That sort of, is that essentially the vibe?
I do.
100%. Yeah.
That is exactly. we do have rules. Like people are required to check in twice a day because twice a day check-ins less than 5 minutes if you want it to be. Yours is involved. We do, because people have tried stuff like this, not exactly as I've done it before, and it's all always fallen apart. The keys to this have been professional GMs, people who want to do this as their job. Because you have to have somebody who's curating these games all the time, and you can't. The past examples of this have been free, and they always fall apart because nobody can find the time to do it at scale. You have to have professional GMs to make that happen. And the other thing has been certain rules, like we require people to check in twice a day and things like that. Those things keep things moving, and it's been amazing. Like the response is there, and we know that the market is there. We're trying to figure it. I mean, no, we had a good year last year, and this year is shaping up to be pretty good as well. We have to find, the biggest struggle is, like, all my money goes back in, because if we don't figure this out as a small business, then a corporation's the market is there. It's proven. Yeah. It's a fact. Mm-hmm. We can make this happen. If we don't figure it out, a corporation's going to, and in 2 years, you're going to see people, somebody big doing this with a lot of money. So that's been the biggest struggle, is just finding the in to get the out.
I think what you're saying, we've already seen the beginnings of, because AI GMing. I don't know if y'all have heard about, but it's like, I know that people have talked about, I know when D&D was announcing their new VTT, that there was a lot of suspicion and fear that it was going to be using AI DMs. And I can absolutely see a scenario where somebody has something like a ChatGPT that will just create stuff and respond and can run theoretically infinite games simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And that is probably, I agree. If a corporation takes it over, I think that's exactly what you would see.
Yeah. But like, just to jump in on that as well, that like that experience is going to be completely just no competition, because there's nothing that compares to like having an actual human tell a story with you, you know?
Yeah. Agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's a mixed mixed opportunity there too, in the sense that somebody who's running a bunch of games can use like some of those AI tools to enhance what they're doing and be able to do stuff at speed and scale. But the plot itself, the interaction, the characterization, that stuff is better coming from a person. I think that that's going to be recognized, what you're talking about, and I think that eventually it will be something similar to what we're trying to do. I think we either figure it out, and we get this to scale up where it can be. I mean, there's an opportunity. Everybody knows that there's never been anybody who's been able to like take market share from D&D on the TTRPG market. Like, it just doesn't exist. They have market share. They have a stranglehold on it. There's an opportunity here, because there's a lot of different systems, and there's some great D&D people who offer great, fantastic D&D games on this server. I don't want to devalue what they do. They're incredible. They're amazing. They're fantastic, and I love Daisy offers them too, but there's a guy named Pirate Tom, and he's just a absolute artist at the table. But I would argue that what the Narrative Universe system offers is a faster, more malleable. It's so good because I'm running space campaigns, pure science fiction. I'm running fantasy. I'm running Old West game right now. I'm running just such a broad variety that the system allows the opportunity to. And that's something that you want in your pro GMing. You want the opportunity to like customize to what your client wants. So I think there's an opportunity here, if we can make this work, to take this and make this the method of professionalized GMing and actually lay claim to some market share that no one's ever even seen before in the TTRPG space.
Now, Joshua, you just basically led into my second question, which is one of the things that really jumped out at me about the system is that it is setting agnostic. Mm-hmm. In looking at other systems, and for anyone who's not familiar with the term, essentially that means that it's not tied to a specific mm-hmm. storyline. If you look at, for example, a game D&D, like
fantasy.
Well, and that's the thing. I would argue D&D is more setting agnostic than say, City of Mist, where there's a plot of Mist.
Oh, if like, you play City masks. Of Mist,
you are or masks. Like, there is explicitly, you are fighting against us and a side of yourself. You are mm-hmm. like a fictional character who has entered this world. That's like, you can't just do a generic noir game for City of Mist without drastically changing the core mechanic and core story at the core of the game. Something like Mouse Guard, for example, is like you are mice in a world that is trying to destroy you. And you are like, you have a mouse society. This is the dynamic that we are establishing. Unless and that can, make it while those games are great. Yeah, while those... Well, say again?
I was like, unless you make it a borrower campaign, like, that could be interesting. But yeah, no, go
ahead. Yeah, I mean, you could. But you essentially, for those games, while those games are great, they are... I think what has helped D&D become the juggernaut that it is that it's relatively setting agnostic. Agreed. Beyond just the bounds of, like, sword and shield fantasy, which you can mess with D&D to do a lot of stuff that doesn't even really involve swords. Folks who have been longtime fans of the show are probably familiar with us playing the Wagadu Chronicles, which takes D&D out of a European context and puts it in a sub-Saharan African fantasy context, or Outlaws and Obelisks, where it takes D&D and puts it within the context of a Western. We have a series called City of the Black Rose, takes D&D, puts it in like a fantasy noir context. Like, it's possible. What I love about Narrative Universe is that it is also setting agnostic, arguably even more so than D&D, because it is so much more rules light.
It is. And that's one of the great things about fate rules and the fate rule system is that, like, you can come up with someone can come up with something that you've never thought of, and really quickly you can look at their stats and you can say, okay, I'm going to roll the 100-sided dice. I'm going to adjust it up or down. And they can come up with a mechanic on the fly. Something I've talked about before is, like, pursuit mechanics in my game are pretty awesome. Like, I've done some great – something I've heard about, I don't know, about Dungeons & Dragons is pursuit mechanics aren't great. So it's hard to create chase scenes. In my game, there's some amazing chase scenes because someone they'll be rolling against – you'll do roll against, like 100-sided roll against. You'll ask whose car is faster. I'll give this person a plus, so you get a plus 20. I'm going to then shoot their tires out. Okay. Like, how does that affect it? I'm going to roll a fate roll, which allows me to, like, triangulate on the fly real fast a set of dynamics that allows for, like, I've had some of the best games I've ever run have some really, like, just amazing chase scenes in them, and the fate roll gives that option. But, one thing, the book, unfortunately, we only had so much time, so we had to pick what class we're include, but I have 300 pages of classes ranging from Quantum Mage to Technomancer to Netrunner to Urban Druid and everything in between, so...
Very cool. I was just going to ask if you could, like, go in depth more about the Fate role, like, how it came about, and, like, and something that excites me about it is that you have mentioned, like, in what you sent over to us, that it is about giving the game master agency, which I love. I like you say, like, just being sat there as a game master and thinking I'm just facilitating things, I'm not really, like, helping with the story, can sometimes it can bum you out. So, like, yeah, no, how did the Fate role come about?
The origin is what I talked about when I talked about the 100-sided roll against. That's where it came from. Was that that was the origin of it. We used to just say roll your fate. Like, that's how we you know, something would happen, someone would do something, and, like, in reality, you can have, like, a set of rules, but what does it really mean for a mace of disruption to hit a plus two shield? And where does that, what does that stuff mean? So I'm going to give you a plus 30, roll the 100-sided. I'd look at the number. I'd go, okay, what does that mean in the context of the situation? Maybe you deflected the attack, but your shield fell down, or you dropped the shield or whatever else. And you would, make those kind of determinations. But I'll let Daisy has a lot of insights into the Fate rolls and why they like it so much. She likes it so much.
Sure. Yeah. So honestly, the Fate roll mechanic is sort of what sold me, especially as a game runner, as the narrator for the system, because it separates out. So the base mechanic in the system for the Fate roll is to separate out whether the player's actions succeed and whether that success has a positive or a negative narrative impact. Separating those two things out, I think, really is what gives the system a lot of its flexibility, because you can use the set of abilities that we give, and we give the standard, like Dungeons and Dragons, strength, dexterity, constitution, just to make it as accessible as possible for people who are just coming from Dungeons and Dragons, so they can kind of look at that and go, oh, these are familiar, I know what these do. But then we just kind of give you the freedom to use those in a lot more ways. So it becomes if there's not a direct mechanic, the narrator can say, okay, yeah, that's kind of like an acrobatic type of skill. Roll a dexterity skill check and then make a fate roll to follow it up. And that way the example that we give in the book for it is if like the party is trying to sneak into the villain's castle. And let's say they want to like climb up the side of the wall. Well, they might fail their strength checks to climb up, but make a high fate roll and end up like swinging off of the castle in through an open window, tumbling over each other. And they're in a completely empty room and no one knows anything about it.
That's fun.
Or then they can go like sneaking around and might, you know, make pass their check to sneak around, but make a low fate roll and discover that the villain's plot is much further along than they anticipated. So it takes a lot of the pressure off of the narrator to have made all of those decisions up front. A phrase that I heard recently, and I believe it was coming from the Apocalypse World handbook, was to play to find out what happens. And that idea is something that's very present in our system as well, that the narrator doesn't have to kind of sit there and have the whole module and all the little bits and pieces and puzzle pieces figured out. They can really be a player at the table as well and let the dice kind of make the decisions about what, like, how it's good or what's bad. And then your job really just becomes the storytelling aspect of it. As well as a lot of our mechanics, because all of the skills, all of the spells that are in the system were created by the people who played and playtested the system before it became public. So there are fairly loose mechanics for a lot of the skills. The players are really given the agency instead of like something in D&D where you have someone saying, hey, like, you know, it doesn't say I can use this spell this way, but can I use like Vine Whip to try to like save them from falling over the edge? Where like, that makes a lot of sense. You don't necessarily anymore have that, like, well, the mechanics don't really say that you can do that. No, like, it's just built into the system that, no, you're supposed to use your abilities in those cool, creative ways. And then we let the dice decide whether or not it works.
Okay. Could you give an example, Daisy, as somebody who has run this system? Can you give an example of like what a typical session, quote unquote, might look like, and also how often one might use fate rolls? Because when I first read about it, like when I first read the name, I thought of, for example, like the Box of Doom from Dimension 20, which is usually going to only show up maybe once or twice in any given episode. Sure. But it seems like fate rolls might be significantly more common. Can you give us like a little idea of what a typical session might look like and how one might use fate rolls throughout that session?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is obviously, it's going to be a little different if you're running an ongoing campaign to if you're doing a one shot, but I'll use a one shot for example. The way that I try to structure them as a narrator is much more cinematic. I really try to think of it kind of in like a movie style structure, because like Josh was saying earlier with the like chase sequences, the scenes play out a lot more cinematically than they do in Dungeons and Dragons, where it seems like it's a bit more mechanically focused. And as far as how often you make a fate roll, that really depends. You can go, I've gone in some of these one shots 30, 45 minutes without calling for a single roll just because there wasn't really the need to with role playing and amongst the characters. And, oh, I want to go visit someone and talk to them and kind of do these things. There's not always necessarily a need to have the dice. But there are also times where I might ask for a fate roll 4 or 5 or 6 times in a 10 minute window. Especially if it is a very like action heavy sequence where you're kind of going back and forth between the party and the enemies and both making actions and trying to outdo each other. And every party member is trying to, you know, do this or that. You can use the fate roll a lot more often. And it is sort of something that is sort of always in your back pocket. Whenever there is an action that heavily impacts the narrative, that's really when you're like, cool, let's decide if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. I imagine as well, like, cause I feel whenever I'm GMing, I feel guilty if I like make a decision that kind of like I can do a luck roll, but it never feels like sound to me. Like, having this actual mechanic that is the fate roll and like allowing you to like take that hard choice away, in some respect, it is really nice. And just like leaving it up to the dice is really good.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times has any of us been asked a question? Can I do X, Y, Z? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that. I didn't know you were going to use peanut butter on the bear's mouth. I could see maybe that works, but I could also see the bear biting your hand off.
Exactly.
And just like, what do you roll? Okay, roll a dex, I guess, but that doesn't really, then what is the bear roll? Because if it's just like, can it bite me? Yeah, but you can also get lucky. And how fast really are you with those? How good is your agility?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Are you going to lose a finger? Are you going to lose a knuckle? Or...
Right. Yeah.
And players love it. They will, if it doesn't go their way and they know that you gave them a chance, and usually I'll say, you got a 75% chance of that working, or you got a 25%.
Yeah.
I've been doing this a long time, so I've gotten really good at real good at like feeling out where people are going to be and what people are going to say. Yeah, that's a good eyeball. And then but they respect it as long as they got the role, as long as they got the chance. What they don't like is a narrator looking at them going, there's no way that works, when in their mind they can absolutely see how it works. And maybe you can't, because like there's a philosopher once who said, The most unobvious thing is what's obvious. What's obvious to one person is never obvious to another. It's a really hard thing for like rational agents to get their mind around. What is obvious to you is not obvious to anybody else. And that plays out on the table all the time. People are seeing an imaginary scene. They're definitely seeing it differently. That's the difference between storytelling medium and a medium like film or photography, where you're framing a moment. And, you know, so many people have said, I think truthfully, that movies the best are not a great storytelling medium. That's not what you're really trying to do. You're trying to frame moments, and that's limiting people's imagination. It's not opening it up. Whereas if you say like a joke and you say a horse walks into a bar, you're imagining a particular horse at a particular bar, and every person gets engaged that differently whenever you're storytelling. That becomes both the beauty and the hell of TTRPGs, because everybody is it doesn't matter how good you could spend 10,000 years describing things to the aching detail, which by the way kills the game, you still won't see everything the same way into the game.
Yeah, I think that's the
problem. This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
A really good example of that, and this is like a side note, but just like how differently everyone thinks about things. I'm obsessed with like those, there are these TikToks that are like, hey, imagine this scene, and like, is here's a river. Is it like large or is it small? Or is it like, here's a cube. Is it huge or is it like, or is it tiny? And like, and then like they give you like, oh, this is what your personality is based on those. But like when I hear people talk about like their different, what they imagine, how different it is from myself, I'm like, oh, wow, that's really fascinating. So yeah, absolutely agree.
What is a small river? Oh, what is a big river?
You know, yeah,
like,
right.
That's based on a ton of, there are people who have never really seen many rivers their whole
exactly.
life.
Exactly. How many people have actually looked at a at a notable river?
Like if you ever hit the Mississippi.
Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Exactly.
Cincinnati, so yeah. I'm not that far from the Ohio River, but like right. a lot of people, if you're in Central Ohio, good luck.
Right. When you hit the Mississippi, I remember the first time I ever saw the Mississippi, I'm from Texas. I've seen tons of rivers, tons of rivers. And I thought I had a big idea till the first time I ever crossed the Mississippi, which I can remember doing as a kid, mm-hmm. and my mind was destroyed. Like what a river is yeah. redefined in that moment. So mm-hmm. like what does that even mean? Even a bigger or small, if I tell someone and I'll do it, you come across a large river, I know that all my players are seeing something completely different.
Yeah.
Which is a tool, by the way, to use. You want that. Mm-hmm. That sometimes when people go, well, how big is the river? That can be really awesome and really useful, and I'm glad they did that. And there's another one, like, I like the fact that everybody was kind of envisioning this differently. And how can you utilize that?
And to jump off of there real quick, I think one of the mental switches for me that happened when I started really narrating with the narrative universe system as opposed to D&D is that you don't worry so much about things not going to plan, quote unquote. Yeah. So when a player goes, oh, like, can I try to find a contact in this bar that is like connected to the black market in the city? I'll say, yeah, go ahead, roll charisma. And if they succeed, I'll go, cool. Describe the character. Like I'll give that agency directly to the player to kind of take over in that narrative moment, because just as you've both said, it really helps enhance and enrich the narrative when you pull in multiple perspectives and it's not just the characters going, I do this, and then getting dictated how that looks. Like I love giving the character the opportunity to be like, oh yeah, that's a really cool moment. What does that look like? How does your character pull that off?
Yeah, and we know that like player agency is really important to you and for this for this this TTRPG? Like, can you tell us more ways that you like allow players to like really kind of like take the reins and allow GMs to kind of release the reins a little bit, I guess?
Yeah, so there's a lot of skills in the system that are sort of defining like the character's background, or we'll have certain skills that are like upper realm connection, where like you make a connection with an angelic type being. And so that's always the player's decision to bring that narrative, to bring that story element into the game. And in that way, right, they are encouraged to not just like, oh yeah, the narrator says, okay, you meet X, Y, and Z angel. They're encouraged to work with the narrator. And we try to be very explicit in the rules, like work with your narrator to come up with some kind of connection that works for your story together. So we try to directly in the rules bring in the players to working with the story as much as we can. And that goes not just from those skills, spells. We're pretty explicit in our spell list that like we don't have like flaming hand and fireball. We just have like pyromancy. And how you use that control of fire is up to you. And then again, with the fate roll system, that decision of whether or not you can use it that way is further taken out of the narrator's hand. And just sort of, you're allowed to engage and play to find out what happens in the story, just like everyone else.
I had a couple of things. Oh, Joshua, did you have something?
I just wanted to add one more thing for that question. Everything in so I've done 28 years, hundreds of games, 20,000 hours at the table. Every game is interconnected. Everything in my game, every plot, every creature, every setting, everything was created by a player. All of it. There are plots going on all the time. They are all player generated. Going back years, people create companies, countries, corporations, everything that influence everything else in the game. They spend years dedicated to growing the narrative. Everything in my game is interconnected. So it's all player generated.
Amazing. That's extremely cool. Joshua, when you were talking about the way that it can in some ways limit storytelling, or at least alter the way that storytelling functions, it reminded me of when people used to ask me about, because I'm a professional actor, people used to ask me about the difference between film and theater. And for an audience member, the thing I think to keep in mind, and this also relates to what we're saying about TTRPGs, if you're watching a film, you are watching a specific perspective on an event. You're watching the camera's point of view. If you are watching a play, you can look all around the room. Yeah. You can see, while the play is happening, you can look at whoever you want, focus in on whoever you want, listen to whoever you want. Especially if it's a musical and there's multiple people singing at once. In some musicals, like say Les Miserables, there's parts where you have like 15 people all singing different lines all at the same time. It's like, what? Like, you can just look at, you can choose, you get to curate your experience. Whereas with film, it's forcing you, you're looking at this person, listening to this person at this point. And so it's limiting the perspective. Like, you're now it's your perspective of somebody else's perspective. With this, it's now, with theater, it's now like your perspective of an event. But with something like a TTRPG, the event is not even physically happening. The suspension of disbelief has gone through the roof. So now it is a shared creation. It's a shared perspective on an imaginary event that all of you are helping to create. And so something like that, that allows people to have more agency in a situation like that, or at least helps to adjust who has agency in the situation, helps to decide the agency and what is supposed to happen in the story, helps tremendously. And I think that's really where the fate dice or the fate rolls really come in, is because that's what that's there for. It's to say, all right, we're all sitting here trying to imagine a thing. We're all trying to make this thing up. We're all keeping the beach ball in the air. Is now like the leaf blower that we come in and blow the ball in a specific direction to see who gets to hit it next, essentially.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
I was just going to say, I'm kind of, as a theater gal, I am so excited about that comparison that you made, because I think film, I think, plays an important role in this, but to a slightly lesser extent, I think there's something special about live theater that really acts and works as such an engine to build empathy within the world. And that's truly what I believe is like one of why live theater is so important, is because it creates empathy and love and destroys hate. I think it is one of our most powerful weapons to combat hate. And I think that extends towards TTRPGs as well. And I think the more you get players at the table actively engaged in that storyline, the easier it is for them to personally connect with people and situations that they would never have encountered in the real world. And even if it's not, even if you're doing a standard like Dungeons and Dragons sword and sorcery, I think even that practice of empathizing with people that you are not really directly connected with helps build that reflex within yourself and really does help impact the world. And I know that might sound like highfalutin.
No, I get it.
But yeah, I truly believe that true TTRPGs and are very important as an art form.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, as well, it just made me think, because I've done some acting in my time. No surprise to anyone that I'm a musical theater girly, but like, it's rare for you in just day-to-day life to get to like go to a theater and play a role, you know, like getting to step into the shoes of a character is always something that I've like absolutely cherished. And like, you know, when you move on from like university or what have you, it's harder and harder to like find opportunities to do that, which is why TTRPGs have just been a godsend for me. Just like it's just gives you the opportunity to say like, hey, you can do this like 3 times a week if you want to. Just like go and like, and just go and have a good time. And also on that, like playing a role, like a particular person playing a role, is probably gonna, the next person who plays that exact same role is going to take it in a completely different direction. And like it's so exciting to see that happen like at a table as well. Just yeah, great comparison.
Yeah.
We've got a
and
lot.
I think go ahead, John.
No, go.
I think, Daisy, one of the things also that I would say is very similar between theater and especially in person TTRPGs, but in TTRPGs in general, if you are for live theater, if you're in the room there, especially for like the really good performances that really connect, there is an energy that's created that is like about the relationship between the performers and the audience, where there does seem to feel, it does seem to become almost a collective aspect. I remember the play back when the National Theater did Angels in America, and they were doing both halves in a day. And when they would do the Saturdays where they do both halves, by the end of it, you would feel the whole audience willing them across the finish line.
Yeah.
It's like, 'cause you've been here now for like 9 hours or something, and you're like, you're sitting as Andrew Garfield is there giving like the big final monologue, the whole audience is like, yeah, come on. It feels like the whole room is like really into it. Everybody's like, yeah. And when the thing concludes, it's like everybody's like, oh, and just falls back. And it's the same feeling that I think you get in a lot of the best TTRPG sessions. I distinctly remember, Daisy, you were there at the Convergence last year. I remember one of my games at the Convergence, especially at the end, it felt like everybody, as it was concluding, everybody was just like, oh, and like looking around, and there was like electricity, and we're all like, oh, wow, something just happened. It's the same kind of feeling. And any mechanic that can help promote that feeling, which is really, I think, when TTRPGs are at their best, when you have that true sense of like collective creation. And any system really that can lead toward making that mechanic is a system, or making that happen is a system that I fully support. I did want to ask about one specific thing about a character class, because obviously the character, you do not have character races. So that's something that's like a lot more open. I guess you could just describe your character pretty. I mean, you say you can see throughout the art, this is not tied to anyone's setting.
I was going to say, it's so cool. Whatever. So good.
Yeah, it's great. But with the character classes, most of the character classes, fairly straightforward, like map onto what one might expect if they played a lot of D&D. So you have your fighter, you have your bard, you have your priest, so like cleric, you have your mage instead of wizard, et cetera, et cetera. But the one that threw me is the charlatan, because there is not really an easy parallel to that in D&D as such. Maybe the closest might be like the warlock, but I'm curious, what was the inspiration for the charlatan class?
So I was a pastor for 15 years.
Oh, and, okay. And, yeah.
There what does that is, have to do there, with anything?
I was a pastor for 15 years, and there are figures in many religions that are like my favorite. The example that I used to create the charlatan, which called the prayer originally, is Balaam. And Balaam is this figure in the Pentateuch that he goes around and he Yahweh listens to him, but he is not a good person. He is himself a wizard, and he worships many gods, but for some reason Yahweh listens to him. He is a gun for hire. He will bless or curse people in the name of whatever god he's being paid for, and his words have power. So the gods, whatever god he's talking to, does what he asks, even though we have no idea why. There's no sense of being faithful or believing. And there's many figures in the Bible that have great power in spite of their lack of faith or their lack of moral standing.
Yeah. And Samson's
a Nazarite, and people know about the long hair, but they have to understand that there were like 7 rules Nazarites had to follow. He broke all of them except for the long hair. The long hair is the last piece of his oath that is not broken. So when it's not like his power comes from his hair, that's the last straw. But then God lets him break every other rule up to that point and doesn't take his power away. So I always thought it would be interesting to have a class of people who get power from the gods, not because they particularly believe or are faithful or keep tenets, but just because they're so likable and such scoundrels that the gods find it funny and entertaining to give them power. And also, priests are really powerful in my game. Clerics are very powerful, whatever god. So it was funny to create a class that balanced that out a little bit by like challenging, like, yeah, but you know, like, it's not really because you're a good person. It's just like I do the same thing. And so that I love. But then there's the error rate on charlatans that doesn't exist for priests. So like it has limits. Sometimes they just the magic just doesn't work.
Not because, listening.
Yeah, they're not listening. Exactly. It's not that you're not being that entertaining. So I love charlatans. I love prayers. They're my favorite classes in the game. We're coming out with a supplement that's got Slasher Master. So like think of all your favorite Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees, Freddy. You get to be
speaking my language.
It's a class that like there's a skill in it. I think some of the names got changed, but the original word is you best start believing in horror movies. You're in one. Horror tropes, creepy arrival, inexplicable creepy arrival. There's
you just, like,
urban
show up somewhere.
You just show like it's a form of teleportation
stuff. Yeah.
Nobody can see you do it. Like it has to be completely private, and it has to be in a very creepy situation and stuff like that. Urban druid. So you're like you're mixing gasoline together and setting it on fire and calling on the spirits of the city. Mm. There's a skill called the City She Loves Me. So if you're driving in a car, you can get all green lights and stuff like that because the city is your spirit. So we have we've in the supplement we've expanded way beyond, and we have more 150 page books that are just classes and settings and that are dedicated to things that are outside of that. We had to make choices. We chose with the beginning, but if you go to our Discord, there are 300 pages of classes of every Mario Mage, 8-bit manipulator, Mega Man, everything anybody has ever thought of.
Because it's been such a system of yes anding that like whenever a player comes in and they're like, oh, like I kind of want to play Sonic the Hedgehog. cool. Yep. Yeah, Sonic the Hedgehog's now class now. And like Josh said, sort of our inspiration for including Charlatan as was, you know, we'll include these kind of standard set of fantasy races, classes, again, just to be accessible, just to give people a familiar jumping off point, but keep that, get that little bit of a weird one in there to really kind of show what we could do a little bit differently. And like Josh said,
a little bit taste.
And like Josh said, supplement is actually called The Expanding Cosmos, which should be out. I'm not sure when this interview will be out. Hopefully it'll be out by the time this interview launches, but it'll be out soon. And introduces four new classes, including I think the two that Josh didn't mention were the engineer. Which is all about, you know, building and creating things, and the food fighter, which is a class that is designed to, like, if you want to do Iron Chef in your games, there's skills and stuff that allow you to fight against other chefs in a kitchen.
Anybody know the show Food Wars?
Oh, I know of it. Yeah, I've seen clips.
That, you know, it's not something to go watch, but like the clips are hilarious. So somebody wanted to play that, and I was like, okay. So like there's like the whole idea is that they taste the food and your enemy goes down. Not from being defeated, but being so overwhelmed. So if you've ever if you ever watched the clips on YouTube, don't, but also do. You'll see what I'm talking about. And the whole idea is like you have like tons of like damage reduction skills and you're just like cooking while you're being attacked, and then if you can get the food to them, they go down. But not, amazing. That's really funny. Not from damage. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I also want to shout out, I love that you mentioned, we called him Balaam when I was growing up, but Balaam. If y'all haven't read that story, it's very short. It is weird. It is bonkers. it is one of the weirder stories in the Old Testament. And there's a lot of weird stories in the Old Testament, also in the Pentateuch. It exists both in Judaism and Christianity. But if you want to read just a weird story about a random magic man and his
talking donkey.
Yeah, his talking donkey, who appears to only talk because it gets so upset.
It is the most unremarkable response to an animal randomly talking you've ever heard in any story ever. The donkey starts talking, he's all like, "Hey, why aren't you going?" Like, no, he's not surprised that his donkey just started talking.
Yeah.
He's more surprised that his donkey stopped. He goes, you never stop. You're a goer.
the implication is that the donkey just talks. And he's just upset that the donkey wasn't doing what he wanted. Right. It's such a weird story, but I think it's in Numbers. Let me look. Numbers 22 to 24. Just read Numbers 22 to 24. It's weird.
Balaam's mentioned a couple of other places, but in a more negative light. I went to several different seminaries. I'm still Christian. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm going to stop asking questions about or talking about this because as somebody who was
you're
raised
a Bible nerd for sure.
As somebody who was raised Pentecostal, I used to do Bible quizzing where we'd like memorize hundreds of verses a year and stuff.
Oh, did you? You're Pentecostal? Did you
ever? Yeah. Yeah, UPC. I was UPCI.
That's where I got. That's where I became. That's where I first. I went on to Episcopal churches and I know high level theology and all that stuff. But I got my first ordination was in a Pentecostal church.
Oh, nice. That's really cool. Okay. Back to the subject of honestly, Joshua, we got to talk some more.
you really do.
We got to talk some more after this. Hit me with your contact info.
Come by the Discord. Let's play a game. Let's do
a text
game.
I would love to.
Let's do a text game.
Yeah, I'd be super down.
Oh, I would love that, actually. That sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask, before we wrap things up here, we have some admin bits we got to cover. So when is the game being released? How much is it going to cost? What's the format, et cetera, et cetera? What can you tell us about how people can get their hands on a copy?
Get our grubby little mitts on this thing.
Yeah. So the base edition player's manual is available right now. You can download it from our itch.io page through DriveThruRPG or through Amazon Kindle for $5.99. Or you can come by the Narrative Universe Discord and get it for only $5. We also, in the Narrative Universe Discord is where we run all of our Pro GM text games, and where you can also just like hang out with the rest of the community. There's a lot of the, a lot of the things that we are releasing as supplements are already existent on the Discord in some way, shape, or form. So if you are interested in checking out some of the classes that we mentioned, or some of the other classes that are available, and you don't want to wait for us to formalize them, you can get over to the Discord as well. Those are all available right now as a downloadable PDF. And then we are going to be doing a limited print run in the near future, with hopes of getting enough interest built up around the system that we can, you know, get it fully produced and published into a hardcover PDF.
Nice. I do want to also mention, when you say player's manual, you're talking about a 155-page plus document.
Yes.
This
yes.
is not like you get a five-page for $5.99. You're getting 150 pages worth of game
Daisy
info.
Worked
honestly
her
blown away.
Daisy worked real hard on that book. I mean, I worked hard too, but the lion's share was Daisy, and she you never saw someone work harder. And what they what she put together was beautiful. It is a fantastic book. Is a fantastic TTRPG.
I think it just, it's been a real passion project for Josh and myself, and honestly for the entire community. And I think, I hope more than anything that that shows in the book itself, how much love that this community has, not only for this game, but for TTRPGs in general.
Yeah, it absolutely comes across here and also in the book from what I've read, like it like the way it's put together, like the art that's involved, it just it, like and like the way you've written it, it just gets across how passionate you are and how much you can do with this system. And it's really exciting.
Yeah,
so glad to see it exists. So good job.
Absolutely. even down to the cover, which is like the Last Supper, but with the kookiest array of characters.
Those are the space gods, and they're former players or player created characters.
I love it.
They are the supreme pantheon in the narrative universe in my subject subspace of the narrative universe. So yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, always, whenever we have guests, we always ask them, we close things out by asking them for a tale from the table. This is, and I think in this particular case, it's most appropriate that we ask for a tale from the table of a time that both of you have played Narrative Universe. This is like a particularly notable story that was memorable for some reason. It was hilarious, it was tragic, it was triumphant, it was epic. Something that has stuck with you ever since it happened. Daisy, if you're ready, can you give us a tale from the table of a time that you were playing or running a Narrative Universe?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was my most recent streamed campaign that came to an end about a month ago or so here. It was called The Pub at the End of the Universe. And it was about a tavern that existed where after all of the gods the gods of a particular universe, they would go to this tavern after their universe came to an end. And for myself, apropos, we were talking earlier about kind of how slow TTRPGs or Dungeons and Dragons kind of tends to be. And I think especially when you get to higher levels, one thing that I had struggled with is having a really satisfying final session. And there was a moment at the table where I had set up a character who was the embodiment of destruction. And one of the characters was like, oh, do they have a sibling? Like, do they have a sibling that is the embodiment of rebirth? And I went,
oh my God.
Yeah, they definitely should. and from that little, like that moment of like giving that decision up to the character and saying yes in that moment, the entire ending of this campaign changed and spiraled in this really, really beautiful way where they actually, all of them completely ended the current multiverse and gave birth to a whole other like creation of a multiverse. Mm. And it was such this, like, everyone at the table was invested and connected. Jeremy, like you said, that feeling of like everyone kind of like leaning in and having that energy at a table. It was hands down the best, I think, final session I have ever ran. And one of the best I've ever been a part of as well. And that's something that I think was really, really impacted from the system and the boss battle being not, you know, whittling down this huge pool of health, but them talking to, I think it was the God of Time who was the villain, and then basically just like talking to him and being like, nah, what you've done is really messed up and it needs to end. So it's just a really, really satisfying conclusion.
Awesome. I love that. Wow. That's pretty cool.
I'm going to go a very different direction. I'm going to do something recently that happened in a game that was funny. We do a live play, an actual play on Wednesday, me and a group of people. It's going really, really well. And we have D&D Heart. I don't know if you know who that is on TikTok. And she's been joining us on Wednesdays. And before she started, I told her, I was like, it's a really raunchy group. Like they don't have many lines and they go there. Are you cool with that? And she goes, yes, I am. I'm like, really?
Are you sure, though?
It gets pretty extreme, you know. And she's like, yes. And there came this point where she's dealing with the pixie, and they tell you can use the pixie dust to fly. Is there anything else I can do with pixie dust? And they go, oh yeah, we can. We also cut it like this, and you know, snort it from time to time. And I'm sitting at the table. I'm like, will Red, like, did we go too far? And she acts out snorting the line. I was all like, one of us.
Just and a bunch of friends doing pixie dust line.
That's right. And I was like, okay, yeah, you can hang. You can definitely hang.
Josh, I cannot believe that. Like, I at Dragon Meet last year, literally, we were doing like a kind of like pantomime themed actual play session, and there was a pixie involved. And if there's a pixie involved, the dust has to be expanded upon. Like, what do you use it for? Like, do you snort it? Like, it's just a thing. I understand.
Yeah. It's just a natural next step from introducing a pixie.
Yeah, exactly.
Growing up where I grew up and the way I grew up, it's very, very, very natural.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for coming and telling us about this awesome, awesome system. Yes. I can't wait to get to try it out myself, because this is going to be fun.
Yeah, and there's probably going to be some links down below in the description, so you should go and check that out.
Yeah, go buy the game and read it and play it. And
gang, support other TTRPGs. We know the market out there it's a lot. And like, so giving a boost to like a TTRPG and the creators that deserve it, it's quite nice. So check it out. I would say.
You know, I'm on the Discord.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, where can we find both of you, and where might we find, what might one find a link to this Discord?
So you can find me on TikTok and Instagram and increasingly more social medias as we switch them over under Ms. Kurtwise. That is MS Kurtwise. If that doesn't come up, try Mr. Kurtwise, but I'm trying not to misgender myself anymore. you can find in my TikTok that is under Ms. Kurtwise, you can find a link directly to the Discord. We are also starting up a slew of dedicated narrative universe TTRPG pages. So if you look up narrative universe TTRPG on any platform, you should be able to find our page where we have content that's going to be start rolling out there as well.
Awesome.
You can find me at Orsac Narrative Universe on Twitch and YouTube, Narrative Universe, and the Discord is called the Narrative Universe Discord. And it's very easy, because it's just the regular Discord link, you know, discord.gg, and then a Narrative Universe, one word, and that is the link. So it's very easy to get to.
Incredible. Liv, where can the folks find you?
You could find me if you want to across the internet. I'm at Does Dark Magic or at Olivia Does Dark Magic. It'll be one of those two. And you should check out our stuff. We have a website. It is 3blackhalflings.com, number 3. blackhalflings.com. Yep, that's me. Thank you.
Yeah, and you can find me at Jeremy Cobb 1. It's Cobb with two B's and the number one on Twitter and Blue Sky, and also on Instagram at the Cobbmeister. And you can find the show. Oh, you can also find me streaming on Twitch, twitch.tv/casualquestlive. Mostly streaming Baldur's Gate 3 and Disco Elysium these days, but essentially I am not a gamer and I'm trying to become one. by playing classic games and some new games as well. So we recently finished Fallout New Vegas. We've also done Deus Ex Human Revolution, Metal Gear Solid, and we're going to be doing Metal Gear Solid 2 pretty soon here. So yeah, check that out. And follow the show at 3, that's the number 3, Black Halflings, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on Feet Finder as well. We just launched Feet Finder. The Halfling Feet Finder. If you want some really hairy halfling feet.
No, I am excluded. I'm not doing this.
only me and Jasper. go check out the 3DH Feet Finder. Anyway.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, there's more. Wait, we also have a Patreon we should plug. Patreon.com/3blackhalflings. If you enjoy this, you can head over there and hear behind the scenes stuff. You can get ad-free versions of all the episodes. You can also hear extra bonus episodes. I just recently started recounting the horror that is the Spider-Man clone saga from the 90s. So if you want to hear me talk through that in excruciating detail, hear things that... Judas Traveler was a mistake. I'm saying it live.
That whole thing was a
Daisy and Joshua are doubled over in pain right now.
Wild.
It's one of, I say it multiple times, it is one of the most infamous comic book storylines ever for a reason. So if you want to hear that, go over to the Three Black Halflings Patreon. And we'll probably have already done the live shows by this point, but you know what? Just in case haven't, go see April 5th. Live. April 5th
in London.
Yeah,
check us out. But once again, thank you so much, Daisy and Josh, for sponsoring us and chatting to us about Narrative Universe. Google Narrative Universe and go check it out, gang.
Cool. Yeah. So long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk. Josh and Daisy, you can join in if you want to.
So long, Shire folk. Thanks for having us.
So long, Shire folk.
Hey.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.